from across the Volunteer State, the countdown to kickoff with your exclusive scouting report. Welcome to the Coach's Meeting. Coach to Coach.
The offense has evolved for Tennessee, in part based on personnel, but the defense has remained a work in progress under head coach Josh Heupel. Doug Matthews, how is this defense that you've seen during practices and scrimmages closer to what the Vols desire as their defense?
Much more athletic, much more experienced, particularly up front. He has some very veteran players, and he has some young men that have been those guys down there that have been soaking that we talk about that look like they're ready to play. But just from a pure athletic standpoint, being able to run, being able to cover ground, much more athletic. We'll see how they play, of course, as we always have to. But got good depth in almost every position. No team out there in today's football can stand many injuries at one particular position. But particularly up front and in their front seven, they are very veteran. A lot of new players in the secondary. Their top six defensive backs from last year are gone. Five left, either by graduation or transferring. And then the sixth one was injured in the first week of practice. He will not play all year. But much more athletic would be the way that I would describe what I've seen so far.
Dave McGinnis, you've spent years looking at what defenses want to be. What do you think Tim Banks really wants to play at Tennessee?
He wants to be able to play man-to-man, Larry. That's what he wants to be able to do. And within that, then he wants to be able to have guys at the second level that are aware enough to be able to play behind a defensive front that he'd like to just rush with four and be able to play man-to-man and have somebody in the middle to help out on some of the crossing routes and those types of things. But I think starting from the back end, his first wants and desires are to have enough guys to play consistent man-to-man defense on the back end, regardless of what's going on up front.
Doug, fans are always interested in the setup between an offensive head coach in this case and a defensive coordinator. How would you describe the way these two work together?
Well, first off, Coach Heupel did not know Coach Banks at all when he took the job. He did not have anybody at UCF that he felt like would fit that bill. He brought some coaches with him, but not from a coordinator standpoint. I think the fact that Coach Banks had a good bit of experience. Willie Martinez, who is the secondary coach, had worked with him and knew him. He was a little bit of a chance, yes, but what I have seen so far and from talking to Coach Heupel, he is thrilled with the way Coach Banks coaches. He had never called plays before. Coach Banks had not, defenses before. He's got 2 years under his belt, 3 years under his belt, now going on his fourth year. And the relationship between those two, from everything I see, is really put together well. I think they respect each other. But, you know, I would say that really that's kind of the way Coach Heupel is. I mean, if you're going to be on his staff, he's either going to get along with you well or you're not going to be on his staff.
Not sure if the secondary had to wear name tags, but it certainly was a total transformation as they came into fall camp. A lot of transfers out, a couple of transfers in. A case, Doug, of there just not being the players that the Vols wanted?
Well, they lost five transfer players. I think one graduated, four transfers. The only one, if I was a secondary coach, and I was there for a period of time, the only one that I would want back was the Haddon youngster. The rest of them, I'm pretty happy they left, quite frankly. They brought in three transfer players who have played a lot of football. Two of them are corners, one's a safety. They all three could play safety. They all can run. And I think Tennessee fans, from what I've seen so far, I've watched a couple of practices and a couple of scrimmages. I really like the look of the players they brought in. Again, and I'm trying not to be too overly critical on this, there's not a single player that left other than Haddon, who is a cover corner, that, quite frankly, I think they're going to miss it all.
All right, so let's start at corner. What do the Vols have as they enter this 2024 campaign?
Gerard McCoy, Jalen McMurray, two transfer portal players who have played a lot of football, will be in that running for those two corners. I think Gerard McCoy clearly is going to be a starter. McMurray could be, but I think Ricky Gibson, who is a second-year sophomore, he's a sophomore, talented player, will probably be the other starter there. But they got those three guys that they can roll in. And then a couple of guys, William Wright, who's been with them a good long while. He's a fifth-year kid who has played a number of snaps. I think probably that fourth cornerback is going to be a young man named John Slaughter, who is a second-year player. Excuse me, a second-year player. He's got 3 years eligibility left. I would suspect those will be your four or five guys that'll be playing that position. But Gibson, McCoy, McMurray, if they're able, are going to be one of those. Two of those three are going to be on the field all the time when the game matters.
Banks wants to play man-to-man. That's a prerequisite back there. You need two things back there if you're going to play man-to-man. First of all, you need to have the hips and the speed to be able to mirror routes. That's critical. The other thing is you've got to be able to have the ability to challenge the throw. And that's something that they haven't done a great job of doing. Sometimes they've been in good position, but they haven't challenged the throw. That's what you've got to have. But the athleticism and the speed with these guys that Doug has talked about, I think that's putting them on a track to do more what Coach Banks wants to do in that back end, and that's be able to lock people down and make them decide and get off a primary read and go somewhere else, because he's got a front that he can work behind that's going to bring some pressure.
One thing that I do want to point up, and this is where the transfer portal can really help you. All three of these young men, or two of these young men that I'm talking about, McCoy was at Oregon State and McMurray was at Temple. They've got them on tape now. They've seen them cover, obviously, at Oregon State. You cover a lot of great speed out there in the Pac-12. And so that's where this transfer portal thing can really help. You can see, particularly skill players, as Mac mentioned, those guys are out on an island, and you can see if they can cover or they cannot cover. And that has been a big boon for Tennessee to be able to pick up a couple of guys, three guys, and they got another one, defensive back, they're bringing in two, that are cover guys. That's what they've been lacking, are guys that can cover man-on-man, and that's all because of the transfer portal and them being able to identify those players.
Doug, how does the nickel spot shake out?
Bad injury there. A young man who is coming into his third year, Jordan Thomas, was scheduled to be that guy. He's worked his way up. He's a redshirt sophomore. Tore his knee up. He'll be out all year long. And Coach Martinez, who is the secondary coach, in his press conference very plainly said it's going to be between two guys. Could be Boo Carter, who is a true freshman, and will either be him or it'll be a young man named Christian Harrison, who Coach Mack knows. His dad was a great defensive back. He's been there 3 years now, but it's going to be one of those two. It's going to be the starter there. I think Will Brooks is a player, a fifth-year kid who played a good bit last year, but again, Coach Martinez clearly said the competition right now is between those two players, Carter or Harrison.
How do you see the safety group shaking out?
Andre Turrentine, another transfer portal player who came in last year, was there. It'll be him, I think, and then a couple of guys, probably Jacoby Thomas, who is a transfer defensive back from Middle Tennessee. Christian Charles is in his fourth year there. And then that Will Brooks youngster that I mentioned that can play nickel or safety. One thing, though, that Coach Banks has worked towards, and Coach Martinez, and they say that they have that now, they really want to be, and Mac used to be a secondary coach, and so did I. You really want all four. It was four when we coached, now it's five. You want them all to be able to play all of the positions so you can roll them around. Because essentially, if you need to, you can just get down and play man coverage, and the old cat coverage, as you used to call it, you got that cat, go cover him. But they don't have great depth, but they have good depth, and it's all, I think, talented depth.
Dave, last year the Vols were in a catch-22. They want to be a man team, but they had to play some zone. Problem was, they weren't very effective at playing zone.
Well, they're not very effective because if you want to be a good, effective zone team, you have to practice it. And you have to practice it quite a bit, and you have to learn from the jump. And there's things in zone defense And especially, you know, with the width of the way the hash marks are, you've got a wide side of the field that you've got to be able to understand how I overlap. I'm not spot dropping. I'm match dropping on routes, how to pass routes off. And then also your directional delivery keys, you've got to practice that. And by that, I mean the directional key is the area that the quarterback's shoulder and the angle that the quarterback's shoulder is on from his launch point. The delivery key is when the front hand comes off the ball. If you wait in zone defense until the ball is thrown, you're never going to break a pass up, and you're going to be making tackles all day for gains. So all of those things have to be taught. They have to learn how to do it. And so if you're going to be a good zone team, you've got to major in zone coverage. And it's hard to just – it's hard to neither be fish nor fowl. That's the problem they ran into last year.
One thing that I am sure of, you can be a zone – primary zone team and play pretty decent man. You cannot be a primary man team and play pretty decent zone. They just don't go together. You're either really good at zone or you're really good at man, and you use the other as a changeup. But when you get in a ball game, and a lot of your schemes up front now against these offenses, you can't play zone coverage against them. You have to be able to play man coverage against them. So Tennessee in much better area. They are going to be a primary man team this year that plays some zone, instead of the first 3 years being a zone team that played some man.
Realizing, of course, it takes all three parts of the defense. But, Doug, how much will this secondary determine how the Vols defense fares in 2024?
It's going to make a difference between winning and losing. They're going to be good up front. They're going to be good at those four down linemen. They're going to be able to pressure the quarterback without having to blitz. They're going to be much better and deeper at linebacker with skilled players there. It all gets down to success defensively. You know, now if you're going to score 50, 60 points, you don't have to have a whole lot of success defensively. But for success on the defensive side of the ball, this secondary has to play well, and they have to play very well, and they have to play consistent. They cannot give up big plays, too many. You're going to give up some, and they got to be able to do something that the first 3 years they've not been able to. They got to be able to go get the footballs, get some turnovers, get their hands on footballs back in the secondary. They have not been able to do that the first 3 years.
Timeout called. Back to the analysis next. Coach to Coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy of Forklift Systems. Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, to be successful, you need five-star talent. It's also true for your heavy lifting equipment. Forklift Systems will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and what you need to trade or cut. If you're not constantly improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
Quick, how can you turn $1 into the chance at winning up to $500? Just add the Quick Cash feature next time you play Tennessee Cash, Daily Tennessee Jackpot, Lotto America, or Cash for Life. It's easy. Simply add Quick Cash for an extra dollar for a chance to win instantly. And don't forget to check your ticket after the drawing to see if you won again. So play Quick Cash today for your chance at some fast money. Only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details in clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
We thought the Vols would be better at rushing the passer in 2023, but these kinds of numbers? Wow, coach to coach. rolls ahead as we get ready for the start of the football season. Fourth in the nation in tackles for loss last year, eighth in sacks. Dave McGinnis, how are the Vols so successful?
Well, first of all, let's start with the coaching that they get up there. Rodney Garner is one of the best in the country. One of the best in the country. That makes a difference. It not only makes a difference in technique, it makes a difference in mindset. And the mindset that he had, these guys were dogs. I mean, they were constantly going, putting pressure, and plus that they were talented. I mean, they had some talented people, but to me, it was a great, great example of when you are playing with an offense that is going to be moving the ball so fast, and sometimes you're going to have a margin when you get out there, and Rodney Garner can tell those guys, here's what we're doing, here's how we're going to defeat these guys individually, and with the blocking schemes. I think that talent is important, but when you have a top-notch coach that can hone that talent, then you're going to get the kind of results that they had last year.
Doug, let's start at the edges for this 24 Vols roster. What do you see?
Well, that's where it starts, and that's what they had last year. James Pierce Jr., preseason All-American. I don't put a whole lot of stock in preseason All-Americans, but if he's healthy, he will be an end-of-the-season All-American. He's the big difference there. All this that we've been talking about offensive ball, most of the time they don't have a tight end in there, all right? So they have short edges for those edge rushers to come off of. This guy is phenomenal, and he will make a lot of plays. The University of Tennessee has not had one like him since Leonard Little back in the mid-'80s. He is everything you're looking for. He's 6'5". He's up to about 250. Great speed, great hands, bold game. He dropped off from the flat, intercepted a pass, and returned it for a touchdown. He sets the tempo there. And then they got a lot of depth behind him. This Joshua Joseph looks just like him. Same class. Has not reached his potential probably for what Coach Garner has wanted. He looks like he's done that. And then a young man that's a second-year player, the spitting image of James Pierce, Caleb Herring from right here in Middle Tennessee. Tennessee fans are going to catch up with him very, very quickly. If this team gets you in a passing down, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8 or long, you got some problems because they will put heat on you without bringing linebackers or secondary, just for that front four, starting with those edge rushers.
Dave, what do you like about James Pierce?
Well, James Pierce is exactly what you want defensively coming off the edge in this day and age of football. First of all, he's got length. He's got sudden acceleration. He's got first-step explosion. He can be a speed-to-power guy if he needs to. He's gumby enough to put that inside knee down and be able to turn back towards the launch point, and then plus his effort. He is a relentless, relentless football player. You talk about being a first-rounder. I've done drafts for 38 years, and I've already started. This guy's one of the better edge rushers in the country because he's got all of that plus the fact he has developed, and he will need to through this year and will need to as far as his repertoire. You don't need a lot of moves. You need a good one, a great one that people have to protect, and then a counter off of that. This guy is the real deal on the edge. That's no doubt. He is legit on the edge.
Doug, on the inside of this defensive line, Vols can also generate some pressure.
We talked about the offensive line having 6 fifth-year seniors. Defensively, they have 5 fifth-year seniors. Well, 4 fifth-year and 1 fourth-year senior. Amari Thomas, the leader of that group, big physical inside tackle. Brian Eason, great feet, great movement in there. Elijah Simmons, big guy that could run stuffer. Omar Norman Lott. A very athletic play in there, Dominic Bailey. Those 5 guys are going to play a bunch in there. And the thing that Coach Gardner has done and will continue to do, he's going to play at those 4 positions about 11, 12 guys in every ball game. He will keep them fresh. There's some other young guys that we have not heard about yet that we will be hearing about. But those 5 seniors, those are the ones who know how to play, know what Coach Garner wants, knows the ability that they have, and those are the guys that are going to be the leaders on this. And then you throw James Pierce in on that outside. He's only a junior. He will not see his senior year at Tennessee, I assure you.
Keep them fresh and keep them moving. Keep rotating guys in to consistently bring that pressure and that run-stopping ability on the defensive line?
Well, it's huge because that's a lot of work. That's a man's work in there pushing against three. This is what separates the Southeastern Conference from any other conference in the country. You've got big athletic dudes on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And so when you're fighting them, it's hand-to-hand combat. It's bone-on-bone in there with these guys. And so you need to be able to be as fresh as you can be. And you've got to be able to rotate those guys in there because normally those guys that are that size and that can move, you're not going to ask them to play 15 or 20 snaps in a row. And so it's vital. It's also vital to have those types of people, especially in the Southeastern Conference, as quick as the ball's coming out, the quickest area and the quickest way to the quarterback when the ball coming out quick is attack that center guard triangle. You've got to be able to collapse the cylinder and not allow the step ups. Collapse the cylinder, not allow the step ups so that your edge rushers, just like we've talked about Pierce, now they can get to the launch point in time because launch point time has decreased, you know, in the collegiate game. Ball is coming out very, very quickly. But to be able to rotate by the third and the fourth quarter, especially when you get in a Southeastern Conference play, it's massive because you're going against large men also that are athletic. You've got to be able to rotate up front.
One more piece of evolution there on the defensive line, and that is, as Doug was going through those guys, there's a bunch of 300-pounders in there, but these are beef that can move. They are athletic 300-pounders.
Yeah, welcome to the SEC. That is the SEC. All you've got to do is look at the number of them, the number of these players coming from the Southeastern Conference that are scattered throughout the National Football League every draft. Every draft. As I said, this is what separates the Southeastern Conference from any other conference in the country is you've got these kind of guys that are not only massive human beings, they can move and they can move their feet. They not only can drop that blade on that front end loader and just push people back, they can also move their feet and get around blocks too. It's the separator for the Southeastern Conference.
Doug, what's the key for this group up front?
Well, health is always a key, but you know what? They have so many players up there. Again, for four positions, he's got three edge rushers. That's plenty, plenty. He's got 10 guys inside that can play. And you know, one of the neat things he has, and I don't know if this has been developed or he has planned this, but he has players, I mentioned Omari Thomas and Simmons, big body guys. Now, they're not great pass rushers. They have to be bull pass rushers. But then he's got some smaller guys, and I say smaller, they're, you know, 290, 300, that can really move. Norman Lott is one of those guys. Dominic Bailey's one of those guys. Bryson Eason are one of those guys. They got great feet. In other words, he can line up power guys if he needs them. If maybe it's a team that likes to run side to side, he can put those smaller guys in there. They just almost have the perfect fit up there. Now, not a lot of great players. There's probably going to be four or five of these guys that play pro football. But you put a guy, that's where James Pierce comes in. You put in a Pierce or a Caleb Heron or Josh Jones, that edge rusher on there. Believe me, they got five guys up there blocking four. They're going to have to double team a couple of those inside guys, and that means those outside edge rushers are one-on-one out there, and they got a great advantage when that happens.
Get inside the huddle. Higgins, Matthews, and you. Coach to coach. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs, and at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like black Angus burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs, set, stay, eat.
Get set.
The Summer Games record for the women's 100-meter dash is 10.49 seconds. Meanwhile, you got pretty winded walking in from the mailbox this morning. But don't worry, you may not bring home the gold, but that doesn't mean you can't win a little green with Instant Games from the Tennessee Lottery. So unlock your inner winner today and play Instant Games for your chance to win gold. I mean, cold, hard cash. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
Linebackers seemingly got better and better as the year progressed for the Tennessee Vols. What about in 2024? This is Coach to Coach. Dave, this position was, quite frankly, a liability just 2 years ago, but not now.
Well, first of all, it's development. I mean, it's development. It takes a while to teach linebackers. I mean, you can get guys that can run and hit, but teaching them eye discipline as far as being able to when to trigger, what to trigger, how to get ahead of blocks, all of that stuff needs to be coached with speed coming at them. They've done a nice job, I think, of picking those types of players that they want, either at the transfer portal or out of the high school, recruiting these guys. But it's important, especially the way that this defense is going to work, you've got to be able to have guys that have eye discipline, first of all, and then teach them what to trigger off of, and then to believe what they see and go. Because they're going to get a chance, just because of this front that we've talked about, to have some clear views. But clear views don't help you. It's a truth. If you make a slow, correct decision playing linebacker in the Southeastern Conference, you're wrong, because things are moving too fast. You've got to have eye discipline, and you've got to know when to trigger.
And the group has gotten better without Keenan Peely, who was expected to be such a huge part last year. But, Doug, he's back. What have you seen?
Well, it's one of those silver linings. You didn't want him to get hurt last year, but that would have been his last year's eligibility. He's a fifth-year young man, married, got a couple of kids. He's from BYU. I'm pretty sure he probably had a mission, so he went on a mission, Mormon mission, which a lot of those young men do out there. He is the clear leader here, physical experience. He is a man. I mean, he's not a young man. He is a man, and he's that guy inside that, you probably don't want him matched up against a good running back in man coverage, but from tackle to tackle, he is a beast inside on the running game. Arian Carter, young man who really came on last year, got hurt. Tennessee, he's the closest thing to Al Wilson I've seen, and I haven't seen anybody close to Al Wilson. Caleb Perry's in there, Jeremiah Tealander. They don't have a lot of depth there, but they got four really quality guys, and then they got a young guy, this young man that's here out of Nashville, this Edwin Spillman, highly recruited linebacker. Very difficult to play linebacker as a freshman. He will get some opportunities to do that earlier in the year. So it's not a deep area, but it is an athletic area.
Dave, what do you like from the BYU transfer?
Two things. After all my years of coaching linebackers, when I look at a guy, how's his K&D, which is key and diagnose, and then does he have a GPS to the football? Because that's a feel. He's got that. His key and diagnose, I talked about the eye discipline and the trigger. He has got that, but his GPS to the football, and he does a nice job of just because he's got good eyes. The other thing that he is able to do, the better linebackers are the guys that get ahead of the play. And he's a smart player, and he can see, and I'm sure he studies tape. You can just tell he studies tape by what's getting ready to happen, and he can narrow things down. The other thing I like about him is they've got him here for a reason. He can run the huddle. He can run the huddle, he can get people lined up, and he can be a stabilizing force. All of those things always gravitated me to linebackers like this.
All right, Doug, so we've mentioned some names. How do you expect them to line up?
I think, well, clearly Peely, will be there. He'll be one of the starters. I think the other starter is probably going to be Arian Carter, although Jeremiah Thielander, both these guys are sophomores, second-year players. Thielander played a lot of ball last year. Because remember, Carter and Peely were out last year after about the third ball game. Those are going to be the three guys that are going to rotate in there. Caleb Perry is a third-year player, a good, solid player. I don't think that he is in the talent level with Carter and Thielander. And then Edwin Spillman is probably going to be the fifth one there. So they got five linebackers, which is plenty. Four that are going to play, three that are going to play a lot. You know, that's an area, as Mack will tell you, he's an old linebacker coach too. You don't take your linebackers out of the games very much. The good thing about these guys too, particularly Carter and Thielander, we only play two linebackers now. But they can play they can cover people out of the backfield also, and they're also good pressure guys. So that'd be the four guys with Spillman hopefully coming on as the season wears on. He was there for spring practice, but he would be the fifth linebacker right now.
I'm curious, Dave, from your standpoint of looking at this defensive approach of the Vols, what's the key to playing linebacker in Tennessee's defense?
You know, if you got two back behind the ball and you're going to play man to man, you need one guy that can cover. You need one guy that can cover, that you can match on the running back, and then you need another guy that is able to play the low hole, first of all, in the passing game, and be able to help on any inside routes that come out of there quickly. The other thing that you've got to be able to do you've got to be able to tackle. And you've got to be able to tackle for this reason. If you're in man-to-man and your secondary is off and running with routes, and then the ball is handed off, you've got to be able to tackle. You need sure tackles. You've got a front that's going to make people adjust their pattern or their path when they're running the football, but you've got to be a sure tackler, and you have to be a good sure tackler in tandem with the other guy next to you. One guy needs to be the run and hit guy. The other guy needs to be the cleanup guy. That's what you've got to have when you're playing this type of defense.
This is Coach to Coach with former University of Tennessee defensive coordinator Doug Matthews and former NFL defensive coordinator and head coach Dave McGinnis. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk.
There are a lot of physical therapists in Tennessee, and you don't want to go to a therapist. You want to choose the therapist that is right for you. This is Charles Davis. I had injuries in my playing days and valued the importance of a quality rehab program. I know and trust these folks, which is why I would choose Star when in Tennessee, and you should too. Their clinicians have world-class advanced training to make them great mechanics of the human body and to get you better fast. Find a Star location near you at starpt.com.
Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, success demands five-star talent. The same is true for your heavy lifting equipment. Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy from Forklift Systems. Our team will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and let you know which equipment to trade or cut. Remember, if you're not improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips. It's going to be great.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Our kicking game focus turns to the return game, where Tennessee got its share of free yardage a year ago. This is Coach to Coach as we get set for Tennessee and Chattanooga. Doug Matthews, can the return game be a contributor in 2024?
Return game now, with the way the kickoff is, kickoffs really are not a factor much anymore, because over 60% of the kickoffs last year, and this is in division, in Power Five last year football, over 60% of the kicks are either kicked into the end zone for touchbacks or fair caught. I think many more of the offenses now are saying, hey, if we can get the ball to the 25-yard line, that's where we'll take it. They don't worry about returns. A few still do, but very few. Punt returns now with the kickers that we see from the Australian kickers, that kick and the ball rolls, that has gone away also. From Tennessee's perspective, Boo Carter will be back there returning punts. Seldon will be back there returning punts. White will be back there returning punts. And probably in the kickoff area, this is one thing that that more and more coaches, I think, are going to, that I always believed in when I coached kickoff return. I like running backs back there, not wide receivers, because on kickoffs, you're going to get hit, smack pretty good at times. I like running backs back there who could handle the football, were used to getting hit, protect themselves, getting down low. I think you'll see a couple of the running backs back there. Sampson will be back there. Sampson will probably be back on some punts too. Probably Sampson and Seldon will be your two kickoff returners. And I would say that, you know, they'll probably have somebody else working back there, but those will be the two. But again, you're going to see a lot of fair catches, getting that ball up closer to the further than you're probably going to be able to return it with this group this year.
Let's talk coverage and return teams, and this was one of your specialties. First, I'm curious, how do you build return and coverage teams?
Well, it starts with a snapper, right? You got to get somebody who can get it back there, and then it goes with a punter. And your punter is going to dictate what you can do up front if he is accurate on where he's placing the football. The great thing about these Australian kickers, and again, this Jackson Ross kid, who, by the way, got two more years left at Tennessee, they can run to the right and kick the rugby kick. He can run to the left and kick the rugby kick. Well, when you're getting that kick, you know the ball is going to be kicked in that outside hash, so you know where you can aim your coverage people. Everybody up front now, because they get rid of the ball so quick, they're all athletic. They're defensive backs. They're linebackers. You don't have any big offensive line. Well, you got a few back there protecting those three back in the deep. But they're skill players up front. One thing that I've noticed that Tennessee does that I always like to do, I always had defensive players on there. I didn't want offensive players on there, not because they weren't talented, because they didn't work on tackling every day. And whether you can run down there or not is one thing, but you got to be able to tackle. Tennessee should be in great shape on this. Listen to this stat. Last year, 13 ball games. I don't know how many kicks were in there, but there were several. 13 ball games, Tennessee gave up a total of 3 return yards.
Wow.
In 13 games, they had 700 punt return yards in the last 3 years and have only had 23 total yards returned. 23 in what, 39 football games. Pretty strong.
You talk about hidden yardage, Dave. That's it.
Well, that absolutely is. And, of course, they know exactly what they're doing. But you talk about when you build depth, this is what you're looking for. You're looking for space players, guys that can play with speed in space and also can come to balance and still be able to get a returner on the ground. And those numbers are outstanding. I mean, those are really astonishing numbers, really. So they can continue to that. That's a huge part of helping out both other units of your team.
Tennessee's punt return last year likely won in one ball game. It probably won the Texas A&M game because they had a punt return for a touchdown that really turned the game around. So a punt return, you didn't have many of them. You don't get many of them anymore. But, boy, if you get one in a game, you're probably going to win the ball game.
Well, I say this, too. Going through the season last year, I remember we did this show several times, flipping the field in field position. Helped this football team last year, too.
So you look at this Volunteers team as the 2024 season is here. Young quarterback, how does he fare? Wide receiver core that has a lot of talent, maybe one of the best in the country. A rebuilt secondary, how do they hold up against the rigors of the Southeastern Conference? Your ability to go after the quarterback up front, those are all keys. Doug, one of the things that this program has not done well in the Josh Heupel era is go on the road and win. You love lessons. You believe in lessons. How much time do you think this coaching staff spent on trying to figure out why?
I would suspect they have spent a lot on it. Now, we all know it's difficult to win on the road. But if you're going to be a championship team, you know, you're going to play four of them in the conference on the road every year. Some of that is mindset. I'm sure they've looked at what they do when they go on the road. I worked for a head coach. If we went on the road to a conference team and they beat us, the next time we went down there, we stayed in a different hotel. Now, I don't know if that helped us or not, but he sure thought it did. But it is. But, you know, some of that comes also with maturity. And this team, and a lot of it is because of the COVID year. I've said this many, many times. Very few teams in America have benefited from that 2020 COVID year. Tennessee still has players that would be gone if not for that. The transfer portal and the COVID year has really been a huge part of Tennessee's success. Tennessee has lost, I can only name you about three players that have transferred out of Tennessee that were players that you would say, hey, man, we really would like to have them back. The rest of them, not so much. And look at all that talent that they've had come in that have helped this team. You know, as 26 of the 27 wins Coach Heupel has had there has been from a transfer quarterback. So those things have been big, but you have to find a way to win on the road. Some teams have a difficult time doing it, quite frankly, and others don't.
The other thing is, Doug mentioned the maturity part of it. That's critical. You've got to learn to be able to block out literally the noise and still be able to perform. And you cannot let the noise the thing that I've always emphasized when I was coaching and the head coaches that I work for always emphasized, on the road, you have got to be able to withstand that first volley. Not only from what you get from the team that you're playing offense and defense, but you've got to be able to withstand the impact of the crowd. If you can withstand that and then get it down to playing the game and it can take the crowd out of it by your performance, you're helping yourself a long, long way. Now, how do you do that? I'll go back to what I said. A lot of it depends on the dude you take on that trip with you. That's a huge part of it.
Get inside the huddle. Mickens, Matthews, and you. Coach to Coach. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips. It's going to be great.
Pay the order of hope, promise, tomorrow. For years, the Tennessee Lottery has written some pretty big checks, but it turns out that our biggest winner continues to be education. In fact, we've raised more than $7.5 billion and provided more than 2 million scholarships and grants for Tennessee students. Learn more about how lottery dollars are making a difference at tnlottery.com. It's game-changing, life-changing fun.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs, and at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit doubledogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs. Sit. Stay. Eat.
Last week, we looked at the groups in the SEC. The contenders, those that are maybe in the hunt for a bid in the postseason, maybe those that are just trying to survive. Let's do the same for the college football world as kickoff approaches. This is Coach to Coach. So some college football groups, Dave and Doug. Georgia, we placed them last week in that elite, true championship contender group. We also talked about Alabama. We talked about Texas. Doug, outside of the SEC, who goes in that group? Elite, true championship contenders.
Ohio State, you would have to put in there. And Oregon, I would say, would be one out of the in the Big Ten now. Those would probably be about the teams. I don't think Southern Cal's ready to do it yet. Could be there. Don't think so. Michigan lost a coach, lost some great, a lot of depth and great football players. Utah likely will be the team that I would say would come out of there. There's probably another team out there. But, you know, the what came out of the Big 12 media days this year was, I think, very kind of told you what they thought about their league. Parity. Well, if you have parity, that means you probably don't have, well, you don't have an Oklahoma or a Texas sitting there.
The next ones that I would put in somewhere have got to be in the conversation, I would think, depending on how is Notre Dame and Penn State. Let's see the next tier, see where those guys that fall in. Miami, Florida State, whichever one of them doesn't win it, I think will probably have a chance to be in that group. And then the next tier to me is Iowa. I mean, Iowa always plays pretty good football. Then you start looking. Now once you get to the Big 12, and Doug has already said that, you know, the Big 12, they're not going to have anybody in that top tier. And I would say a third tier for the Big 12 possibly be Oklahoma State, would be Kansas State, because they usually are able to come up and beat somebody they're not supposed to.
Notre Dame has, in my opinion at least, the easiest schedule of any of the top teams, whether they're being the Big Ten or the SEC, where they are. Their non-conference is not all that tough because they're not in a conference.
Nope.
They play six teams in the ACC, Clemson not being one of those. I think Notre Dame, their schedule is going to get them probably to 10 wins. A lot of pressure on Notre Dame this year, by the way, because the fact that they are not in a conference, four of the 12 slots are gone from them. They don't have the option because they're not in the league. So they have to be, they're either going to be, if they're going to get in, they're going to be either number five or somewhere between 5 and 12.
The mindset now has switched. It's now get into the tournament. Get into the tournament. The mindset has switched now with this new era of collegiate football.
I'll tell you, I'm fascinated about the whole schedule thing. It's hard to compare college football and college basketball because they are so different. But in college basketball, you start getting down to the end of February, and you talk about strength of schedule, and you talk about where you won and those sorts of things, and how the committee will look at strength of schedule. Like you said, in the Big 12, you know, how do you grade a Big 12 team when there aren't, what we see at this point, elite teams? How does that hurt the ACC that there aren't elite teams?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of grinding, gnashing of teeth when this thing fleshes out at the end of this season.
You're going to see a lot of fight against this, though. You know, it's kind of been the old, and a lot of sports writers, not to denigrate sports writers, they won their schedule. They won every game on their schedule, you know, and that's all they can do. Well, that didn't cut it anymore, because now with 12 teams going, I mean, if you play 10 softies and two biggies, and somebody else, you know, plays eight biggies and three softies, I'm just... You see the analogy I'm making. It's not apples and oranges. It is what your schedule is going to be. And here's what this let me tell you what every head football coach and every athletic director is going to be looking at this year because of the 12-team playoff. They're going to look and watch. And if you do not reward teams for playing non-conference, tough non-conference opponents, then you're going to see them say, why in the world? We'll just play teams we know we're going to beat. So I think they've got to slip that in there, and I think that they will. What they're going to have to overcome is, I'm not worried about the committee. You know, there are those analysts out there. There are those sports writers and those reporters and analysts on TV that always say, well, hey, how can you leave out a 12-0 team? Just like last year. How in their opinion, they thought the schedule of two other teams that had one loss were better than Florida State's undefeated.
You know, and if it turns out that the schedule does matter and that the committee really works it and that it becomes an issue, makes me wonder, will you see a change in scheduling philosophy? You know, we heard for years, well, these schedules, they're set 55 years out into the future and they can't be changed. Guys, we saw in COVID, they can be changed.
Yeah, you got to be able to jump into that. And so, you know, it's going to be a very challenging part for athletic directors and head coaches to come to an agreement on this, because that's going to be very, very, because no matter what you're talking about, if you don't get the playoffs, you still have got to have a winning record too, because that's a very fine line we're talking about now.
Well, I'll give you a little analogy here. Where Mac came from, you know, all the dancing down there is they like two-step and they're by themselves. You know, they dance by themselves. They got a partner over there, but he or she is, you know, they're over there in the corner. Other people are in waltzes. The problem, the thing you just brought up, Larry, they may want to play a big-time opponent, but why would an SEC team or a Big Ten team want to play a Big 12 team?
Good point.
When they can play a non-Power 5 team, get a win, and you not have to worry about and play them at home, by the way. So
that's why it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. We really don't know that part of it yet, how the committee will value that. Let's talk about a couple of storylines in college football. Lincoln Riley. Defense was his bugaboo at Oklahoma. Doug, could you see lack of defense being his bugaboo at Southern Cal?
Well, I think, you know, what you see is what you see. And now he's got a pretty long track record at two different schools defensively. He may like defense, but, boy, he doesn't, you know, defense doesn't like him. I mean, and that's what kept me now. Hey, listen, everybody is talking about Texas coming into this league. Oklahoma has dominated the Big 12 the last half dozen years, including beating Texas. They beat Texas last year. So he had some teams. They went to the college football playoff four times with Lincoln Riley. But you just don't see, or I just don't see how, if he does not get significantly better on defense, they're going to be able to score a lot of points. I just don't see in the league they're going into, I just don't see them being a title contender if they can't get that done.
Well, the first thing you've got to do if you're going to play defense, you got to recruit to defense. You've got to recruit to defense. He hasn't recruited the same caliber of athlete defensively that he has recruited offensively. That's a fact. You better get some dudes defensively in uniform if you really want to be able to compete, especially where he is now.
You talk about what happens with realignment and those that are affected directly, and then there are the indirect effects. For example, James Franklin no longer has to play Michigan and Ohio State every year. One of the great benefits of realignment, James Franklin and Penn State.
No doubt about that. You know, talking about Penn State, the two programs that I think everybody in coaching or has been in coaching really wonders about. It used to be three. I think Miami's got theirs turned around now. What happened to those great Penn State, that great Penn State era under Joe Paterno, and what happened at Nebraska out there with Tom Osborne? Because really neither of those, we talk every year about Penn State. Penn State hadn't been close to winning the Big Ten since he's got there. Something is wrong there. And you would think from Pennsylvania, the state of Pennsylvania and Penn State and the recruiting base that they have. Listen, they are the university in New York and Massachusetts. They're and up east, they are the university, that whole group. And to not be able to really, they've sniffed it, but they really haven't come close to beating consistently either Ohio State or Michigan.
Coach to coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Podcast the show now and catch up before kickoff, where you find podcasts. Coach to coach.